I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Unbelievable journey this guy's been on, man. Unbelievable, right? Mentally tough. So proud of him. Aren't you guys proud of him?
Man, I just want to say, man, couldn't have done it without you guys, man. I've been through a lot. And I just lean on you guys. Heaven, you're always there for me. And for me to go out and do that for you guys.
Big moment for Tyler Bass. Franchise record. Do you have it as the longest in the stadium's history yet?
I'm having trouble finding anything before 1994. Okay. So I've got it since then. Since 94, it is the longest field goal in the stadium, but I'm having trouble finding before that.
Jeremy and Joe, happy Victory Monday.
What are the odds someone kicked a 65-yarder in that, like, 1976? We would know about it, I think. Right?
Would we?
Would we?
What other world events you know about from 1976? And you think you'd know about
the Summit Series, of course.
There you go.
I just know that it happened in the 70s. I actually couldn't tell you anything about it.
Football Monday brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. We have a couple open phone lines. We'll roll phone calls here. Chris Brown joins us at 8:30. Looking around the league tonight, Monday Night Football. The Bucs visit the Chiefs. A healthy Bucs might have a better shot here. Of course, yeah. No Mike Evans. No Chris Godwin. And worth mentioning, if the Chiefs offense looks like it clicks tonight offensively, passing the ball, the Bucs passing defense is a disaster, has been for quite some time.
Do you think this is going to be a blowout?
I don't know, but I would say that.
It's a 9-point spread.
Yeah, we'll see. Just if Mahomes looks good, I'm going to couch it with, okay, good. Hopkins is a part of their offense. Kelsey's been a part of it. We'll see when Pacheco gets healthy, if he gets back. But the point is, the Bucs defense, I mean, it's people get their points. They get their yards against them. So putting that on the side. But if the Bucs win, it would be great. That would mean if the Bills do their job against Indy, then the game here in 2 weeks is for the one seed at the time. The Bills have two losses.
Right.
Baltimore has three. Houston has three. The Chiefs have none.
Are we getting a Manning cast, by the way, tonight? I think we are, right?
A Manning cast? I can check. But thoughts on the Bills game. Here's what I've got for you. Good for Bass. It'll be more about the 40s to 50s than the 61s for him to keep his job and for Bills fans to continue having faith in him. Run defense, a bit of an issue. The Dolphins run for about 150. Both Mostert and Achan got off a little bit. Defending passes to the running backs, an issue. Like the defense, I'll say, Joe, it's about as shaky as I've ever felt about the defense. They gave up long drives.
Yeah.
After the Keon Coleman interception off his chest, they go 97 yards. And the second half of this game was nobody could stop anybody. So I think it's a credit to the Dolphins, who played one of their better games of the year and still lost. And they lost in part because Josh Allen made a couple of freakish plays and because Tyler Bass hit a 61-yard kick. You know, sometimes when we look back at a Bills loss, we say, well, they only lost to the Eagles that day because, is it Jake Elliott who's their kicker?
Jake Elliott.
He hit a 59-yarder in the rain to send it to overtime.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would have won the game. In Houston, big, long kick. That's sometimes a coin toss. Well, the Bills got one to go their way, which is nice.
Right, they had one to go. Was the Fairburn one 59 against them?
I thought it was 59 to win it.
Yeah.
Right, so you got one back. You were due one, and Tyler Bass got you one back. 7-2. Division very much in hand, playoffs, home playoff game, blah blah blah.
Oh, it's cake, right?
You're in great shape. Stay healthy, but that's where things start to get shaky. The injuries. If Coleman is hurt, that's bad news. If Cooper is out for, I mean, he was questionable and did practice during the week. So
McDermott said yesterday it was close to 50-50.
Okay.
on both him and Benford.
Then I feel good about them coming back, if not this week against Indy, being ready for the Chiefs if they don't suffer further injury.
Given that they have such a lead right now in the division, like if you knew Coleman's week to week, and maybe it's going to be like a 3-4 week thing, but you know, okay, he's back by the playoffs, do you feel like you need to add a Coleman replacement for I mean, right now, if what matters most is you're going to cruise the division, we're just figuring out seeding the rest of the way, and I'm going to have Coleman by the playoffs, then I guess the guy I'm acquiring, just I guess what I really need to invest in him if he's only just getting me through the next 4 weeks without Keon Coleman.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder, it could just be depth, though. It could just be, you can't just assume everybody's going to be healthy by the time you get to the postseason and look at what you can look like on offense when you don't have your receivers healthy. You don't necessarily have depth pieces you thought you could trust as much as you could. So maybe there's a, you know, a look. I mentioned that Spotrac is tweeting out, like, hey, KJ Osborne, who went to UB, by the way, like, he's available for New England, and he costs you like less than $1 million. Hmm. Like, if that costs you like a 6th-round pick, is that like a depth piece the Bills would say, okay, he'll get us through 4 weeks, and then he'll also be a better insurance for if we get to the playoffs and someone gets hurt?
Your depth piece is supposed to be, well, it's not even really supposed to be a depth piece, but you would hope that Curtis Samuel can do that, and there's just still nothing happening there. Defensively, right, we'll have to check the injuries to, you know, Two Hill and Dwayne Smoot and see if they're good to go. Sometimes guys go out and come back and then it gets worse. So there's a couple different things to monitor here, and we'll keep you up on that. So stay tuned. 803-0550. I thought they missed Cooper a lot. You know, Coleman didn't have his best game for sure. He drops what might have been a touchdown. Never mind to get it picked off. Like, that's an EPA loss of, you know, 5-6 points probably, and they go down all the way and score. So it was not the prettiest game, but they got away. They got away with it. They escaped. Did they escape? I might not want to say escape. Miami never had the ball with a chance to take the lead in the second half. Once the Bills got to 20-13, I shouldn't say never, because in their opening drive they did. They were up 10-6, and they had the ball.
And then they took the lead with the field goal that they kicked to go up 13-12.
And then once the Bills scored, Miami never had the ball with a chance to take the lead, other than going for a 2-point conversion, which I thought they should have done. Rather than, we're tied. Let's give the ball to Josh Allen, tied. What do we think is going to happen? They were lucky the Bills got only to where they did for Bass to hit that kick. I would have, of course, picked the Bills to get in the field goal range. Didn't everybody in the stadium think they were going to get a kick to win it?
Yeah. Yeah. The Dolphins, I mean,
they might have gotten lucky too, because of Jordan Poyer's penalty. But,
good things happen when you're throwing that pass. Sometimes you get when the ball was in the air, didn't you think it was going to be a underthrown pass interference call? I saw that ball hanging in the air. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a PI. And it wasn't. But then Poyer, of course, comes in and has to wreck the guy. So you get it anyway. I think it's kind of a weird game, because the Bills go touchdown, 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 field goal to end the game on offense. How do they do it? Like, what was their run game was good.
They had a big play to Ray Davis's one.
They got one huge explosive play. Big explosive play. And then I guess they just kind of figured, was it just kind of like the other games where, hey, the game script presented itself as they had to start throwing the ball more. And then when they're throwing the ball more, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
Even when they're not as good as you think they should be, even when they don't have Amari Cooper, like,
the ball in Josh Allen's hands is where you want it.
Yeah, like their 10-play, 70-yard drive. They're going Allen to Cook for 11, Allen to Coleman for 21, Allen to Shakir for 14. That's how they start the drive. Then a couple of Cook runs that are fine. Allen to Kincaid for 4.
Allen had a big 3rd-and-13 scramble.
Like, that drive was Allen.
Yeah.
That 10-play, 70-yard drive that gave them the 27-20 lead.
It's probably a little bit, whatever. The 4th-down play call with a touchdown to Mack Hollins, a great play by Joe Brady. Great call.
Yeah.
It did feel like a game where Allen, a couple times, like, he's bailing you out. Now, you...
Yeah.
You,
even though he missed a couple, too.
Sure, but thank your lucky stars for Allen. The touchdown pass to Quentin Morris, the 3rd-down scramble. So
he should have had another scramble touchdown.
Yep.
That absolutely should have counted.
Back-to-back holding calls that were bogus.
Yeah.
803-0550. We'll roll through some calls. Zoe in Buffalo. Hey, Zoe. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me. I just want to say real quick, what was the injury on Coleman?
Looks like a forearm.
Yeah, forearm.
Oh, forearm. Okay. I can see how that happened. good stuff by Tyler Bass. I just hope the coaching staff keep in mind that he needs to be on that left hash when he makes these kicks. I wasn't too worried, because when he was in college and he kicked that game-winning field goal, was in bad condition. It was like a 62 or 64 yarder. So, like y'all was saying, like, it's more concerning during the 40s and 50-yard kicks. the long ones, he got the foot, and I guess he got the confidence then. But them shorter ones, he kind of sometimes second-guessed himself, and he needed it on the left hash.
Yeah.
Another thing, I want to give a credit to the Dolphins. They changed their game plan. It probably took them 3 years, just like Josh Allen changed his game plan. It took them about six. They played the same style as the Bills did, defense and offense. They did not take shots down the field because it wasn't anyone with the dink and dunk and running the ball. Same little thing that the Bills did. And they played the same exact way, offense and defense, as the Bills. And it kind of, you know, not confused them, but put them in some chess situations. And it was definitely good game by both sides. It seemed like when Coleman dropped that pass, it seemed like the referees were like, oh, y'all not that serious. So y'all bullcrapping right now. So we're gonna throw some BS calls. But I feel like they're in a good situation. I do like to see that other kid I mentioned in the beginning of the season, that Deion Kane guy. And I mentioned before, he kind of reminded me of Sammy Watkins. He got that quick feet work where you like, where is the guy about to go? He's aggressive. They got him on a practice squad. You know, I don't think it's no rush to bring these guys back who is 50-50 playing against the Colts moving forward. But they got some little bit of weapons in that practice squad guy, Deion Kane. I would like to see him. What y'all think?
Okay, thanks, though. I don't tend to think he would be the call-up. I think Shavers probably would be. If there's going to be a point in time where they're missing Coleman, right? Like, that's outside, that's big, that's physical. If they're going to miss him for any amount of time, and you're thinking, okay, a practice squad guy is going to get some snaps, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Kane would get in there, but they've called up Virgil. I think Hamler might be a specific type of receiver they could call up in a spot. And Shavers, they already have called up.
I'll listen to practice squad ideas on Wednesday.
When they don't trade for somebody?
Yes. You got 2 days. You got today and tomorrow to make trades, to make your team better, if you want to try and find answers, whether that's, you know.
Well,
who, if it's defensive end, defensive tackle, safety, wide receiver, whatever it is, depth somewhere. Practice squad ideas are what you do when you're out of other ideas, and the Bills have 24 to 36 hours to exercise other ideas.
I mean, aren't they sitting in their war room for the next 24 hours, and the GM, isn't Bean calling Joe Brady into the office, and just asking, like, do I need to trade for somebody? Like, is Samuel going to turn around here? Like, what's the plan here? Are we going to try to make that work? He's under contract for 3 years. Like, what's happening here? Or should I go get somebody? Like, that's, to me, the conversation.
You know, the funny thing
is asking the coaches, what is happening with this dude, and are we going to try to make it work because we are tied to him next year, too?
There's also the reality that sometimes a guy is a nothing for you and then makes a big play in a big spot, like Mecole Hardman with the Chiefs, right? Stop trying to make Mecole Hardman work. Oh, what's that? He caught the game-winning touchdown in a Super Bowl or whatever. Like, you know, sometimes a guy...
Was that Kadarius Toney, too?
Yeah, right.
Both
right.
of them.
Like, they don't work, but in a big game, you get one play. That's Mac Hollins to a degree. So that's where you get to depth versus practice squad guys. You know, is Jalen Virgil going to catch pass this year? He had three snaps.
He's their motion guy when Samuel's not
right,
out there.
Yeah. Right. But you know what? So, like, I always key in on one thing here, and it's probably stupid and it's probably wrong, but I'll say it anyway. What did Amari Cooper out of the lineup mean? It meant that Dawson Knox was out wide multiple times, and he's the guy in motion. And I'm just thinking, like, if you line Dawson Knox up out wide, what team is thinking, like, that's something to worry about versus Amari Cooper in that spot? I'm sure different formations, different everything, but whenever I see it, I think that I don't ever want that. It doesn't seem like I'm in a good spot when I'm doing that. 803-0550. Cooper was 50-50. You know, I think this offense with Cooper and without Coleman, could it still work? Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, is Cooper better than Coleman?
Yes.
Yes. He's a more...
I think you still have to get
He's a more complete idea, and if Coleman were to miss time but Cooper is in, okay, I feel like I can get by a little better than vice versa. And if they're both out there, then of course, you know, I think I'm pretty good. 803-0550. Anthony in Toronto. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Gentlemen, it's nice to be on the right side of a kick on a football Monday, eh?
That's right, Anthony.
Hey, so I just wanted to, I usually am a guy half full type of guy, but obviously going to take 7-2, and the Cards are all in our hands, but have big concerns with our run defense, especially knowing that the teams in the AFC that we'd have to face in the the championship or even in the playoffs are going to have a pretty stout run offense that really just goes up the middle. And hopefully in the next couple of days, as you mentioned, there's some addressing of that. And just wanted to see your thoughts if there was – I know you talked about Campbell a little bit, but is there anybody else out there that would make a difference on the D-line that we could help? Because it doesn't look like McDermott's going to change his structure from his defensive front, and he leaves the box pretty wide open. Just like to hear your thoughts on that.
So defensive lineman ideas –
I know edge guys that could be, like, Za'Darius Smith in Cleveland is one that's expected to be traded, but that's an edge guy, so, like...
But that's the thing. Sometimes it's the edge guy that you want, because where were the Bills getting beat? Around the edge.
Yeah.
Right? Those tosses wide. Can I get a better defensive end at setting the edge, right? Shaq Lawson was on this team for a long time because he can't rush the passer, but he can set the edge pretty well. And do they want somebody that can come in and do that better than what they have?
Well, the guy that had been doing it is Casey Tuhill, who's also hurt right now.
Right.
And Vaughn's back, but Vaughn is not doing that for you ever.
No, Vaughn was a non-factor yesterday?
Pretty much.
But that's an offense that gets the ball out quickly most of the time. I thought they did a good job protecting him.
Yeah. I'm still thinking interior line for that, but I guess it could be edge.
Could you just be waiting for Dwayne Carter to be healthy again? Because he was pretty good. Ilyanku showed up in a couple of nice plays.
That's where he
often does.
That's where Campbell is kind of perfect because he plays both, right? Doesn't he play both? I'll look up the snaps. He's enormous. He's like 6'7", 300, whatever. But I think the book on him is he's going to play defensive tackle for you, and he's going to be your edge defender. He's going to be your Shaq Lawson and your, you know, interior, who would this be?
6'8", 300 pounds.
Yeah, like another Daquan Jones on the roster while also being your, like, Shaq Lawson edge defender guy, but better. Like, Campbell really is kind of perfect. You just got to get Miami to trade him to you. They might make you overpay.
Tony and Kenmore. Hey, Tony.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm mostly focused on the running back for this call, but I know it's low-hanging fruit, but, man, Joe Brady's ability to scheme those flare passes open – has been big. I mean, I've noticed that a lot this year, and it helps when Josh hits him in stride. But part of the, you know, Brady's scheme with motion and misdirection in the passing game has opened up that part of a passing game that I don't think we've seen in several years. And obviously it was massive yesterday. On the running backs, I know that people are going to want to have the conversation about, you know, playing time and whether or not, you know, it should be more reps for Davis or whatever. And that's fine. It's a good conversation to have. But the depth and versatility as a whole, to me, has been a big part of the success of this offense this year. I mean, it's not just, you know, giving Cook a blow. It's putting someone in who can do a lot of the things that he can do and some things that he can't. And then even you can get to your third guy in there in a crucial red zone third and two and have the confidence to bang Ty Johnson up the middle for 4 yards and a first down. The things the running back room is doing this year, I think it's been huge. I think it's been huge, and I think its importance is only going to grow as the playoffs draw nearer. And it's been just a really welcome part of the roster build for me this year. Not an afterthought, as running back sometimes can be.
Thanks, Tony. I mean, you laid it out nicely. Part of the reason running back might be an afterthought is because I want you to remember that when we're talking about should James Cook get X millions of dollars to stay on the team, or should they just keep supplementing it with fourth-round picks? Like, Ray Davis is a fourth. This team has spent two-thirds and a second and a fourth on running backs.
Mm-hmm.
And Ty Johnson's in that mix as a free agent, right? Like, so I hope they get good stuff out of running backs because they do invest reasonably high picks in it.
I really do like where they're at right now, though.
Yeah, me too.
All three guys have speed. All three guys are a little bit different, right? Cook's still the lead guy, but yeah, I'm very happy with where they are right now, and I would not want them to. I'm glad they're at a point where the running back is not the position we're talking about at the deadline.
It'd be really hard to get to that point, I think.
Right, like Travis Etienne is someone that might get dealt tomorrow. And, like, not even a thought.
No.
Not even for a single second.
Then is he even their best running back in Jacksonville? I mean, Tank Bigsby's
pretty good.
Looks pretty good. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight, we are Bucks fans.
Yes, we are. But I'm not that hopeful.
Which,
but you never know. The Chiefs, you know, not this year, but in past years, they've lost some weird games.
Listen, it's a Monday, and the Chiefs are playing at Arrowhead in a primetime game. We all have to ask ourselves the question, do we want to stay up until 11:30 to see a flag decided for Kansas City? Do you want to do that?
Mm.
It's what's going to happen. It happens every... Actually, it's holding. Okay.
Yeah.
There it is. They win by two.
I might take the risk. We'll see how the game is going, because that's how they get you sucked in, don't
they?
That's
right.
Because the Bucks are up by three at halftime. I got to stick around for this. And then, right, the scenario you laid out ends up happening.
Rookie report, a very interesting note on the Patriots. The Patriots might have such an interesting life going forward. Right now, they would have the number one pick in the draft. And in the last, 2 weeks, Drake May, 3 weeks, they're like, we got our quarterback. They might have their quarterback and have the first pick. And you know what that means? If you're New England, if you play your cards right, if you finish with the first pick, you trade out and you take a king's ransom and you start to build around Drake May like that.
Mm-hmm.
Drake May looks, I think he's good. Mini Josh Allen. I don't know if he'll ever be as good as Josh Allen. That'd be tough to do. But there's some Josh Allen to his game. I'm on the ground floor of that comparison. 803-0550. He ran for 95 yards yesterday, Joe.
Yeah, he can scoot.
Other than Allen and Lamar. Who else runs for 95 yards at quarterback?
Kyler once in a while, right?
Yeah.
But not many.
It is Victory Monday. Football Monday brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. Chris Brown joins us next. We'll get his recap of the call and continue taking your phone calls here. Bills, 7-2 and cruising.
Let TRS Heating and Air Conditioning intercept your heating bills. Enter now, WGR550.com, for a chance to win $1,200 towards your home heating costs. Contest ends January 5th. TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence. Powering tomorrow, comforting today.
Fakes the handoff, fakes the throw, comes back. Wide open in the end zone is Mac Hollins for a 2-yard touchdown reception. The former Dolphin across the back of the end zone as the Bills give the Dolphins a taste of their own medicine with some misdirection.
Chris Brown's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by the Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women.
Here's the snap. Back to pass. Blitz coming. Wide open, Ray Davis. 45-50. 45-40. Still on his feet. He's going to go. 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Ray Davis. 63 yards.
Chris Brown's call of the Ray Davis big play. Bills get the win. They are 7-2, which marks the best mark, the best 9-game start under Sean McDermott with these Bills. They were 7-2 back in 2020 as well. To the Western Hotline to talk with Chris Brown. Chris, as you're getting ready to call that 61-yard field goal attempt for Tyler Bass, you know, it's kind of a beautiful moment. I feel like Bills fans ride this ride with the team, follow the team very closely and the players, and everybody would have known what that field goal meant, not only for the game, but for the player as well.
Yes, and you kind of felt like, sure, there are always naysayers that, you know, get disenchanted with a player that's struggling and, get rid of the guy, get him out of here, get somebody else. And I think there's a strong faction of Bills fans where if you've put work in and you've helped this team before, they'll hang with you and pull for you. And I kind of felt like there was a strong faction of Bills fans pulling for Tyler Bass to pull himself out of the struggles that he's had stretching back to late last season. You know, it got to a point where, you know, they had a practice squad kicker on this roster 2 weeks ago just to serve as a little extra motivation. And we've said it on our show on One Bills Live, just to quote Sean McDermott, when Tyler Bass is right, he's a weapon for this football team. And we haven't seen it in a while, but we saw it at the end of the game yesterday. He's a weapon for this football team, and he's now 9 for 9 in the last minute of the fourth quarter in overtime on field goals. And it's the second time he sunk the Dolphins, because he did it in 2022 in that December game where it started snowing at the end. Kicked the game-winning field goal there. Granted, it was only 25 yards, but he's put them to bed a couple of times now.
Bills get the win. Your overall take on the game coming out of it was a back-and-forth affair. First half looked a lot different than the second half, and both these teams were able to work the ball down the field with the run, with the pass. We saw long drives from both squads.
Yeah, the second half, things kind of picked up precipitously, and Eric and I on the broadcast were even talking about how the end of the game looked like the start of the game last year in week 4. When the offenses just went back and forth, touchdown, 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 touchdown. That's how it was at the end of the game yesterday. Really made for an exciting second half. You just didn't know where it was going to end. You know, defensively, I think you kind of expected that to some degree from Miami, which was shorthanded due to injury. But then, you know, the Bills lose a couple of defensive ends to injury in the second half. You know, they've got backups playing in the secondary. Setting the edge in the run front was a problem. Some run plays got out of the gate on the edges there, which you don't typically see from a Bills defense. So that's going to have to be corrected this week, and it kind of led to some gains. I was just so surprised how Miami's offense was so effective and efficient with the dink and dunk game. They really didn't try to stretch the field at all yesterday, and really didn't have to, because a lot of their throws to the flat and screen plays were effective in moving the sticks for them on a consistent basis.
The Dolphins sticking to the run game in this game, Chris, how demoralizing it must be from their standpoint, because it felt like that's the game plan they've wanted to execute against the Bills in the past. They finally get it, and they just still can't win here. Like, it's no matter what game plan style they come out with, the Bills just continue to have their number.
Yeah, they just can't get past them. And there are teams like that that for stretches will just have your number. And, I mean, I think it's safe to say that the Bills have the Dolphins' number. I mean, they haven't won here since 2016. And, you know, that was an overtime game. And the Bills had 10 players on the field. And Jay Ajayi's running down the sidelines. You know, that's a previous coaching regime. I mean, Sean McDermott's never lost to the Dolphins at home. It's just it's crazy to say that, knowing he's in his 8th season. And, you know, we should probably also mention that Sean McDermott, now at 80 wins, becomes the 13th head coach in league history with 80 victories in his first 8 seasons. And if you look at that list, there's 4 Hall of Famers and probably 5 other guys that are going to the Hall of Fame. So it's pretty prestigious company.
Bills able to get through a number of injuries in this game. You mentioned the guys that went out. No Christian Benson, no Christian Benford, no Amari Cooper. With the Cooper side of it, Chris, do you feel like you could tell that they were missing him? It's only been 2 games with him. Sample size is small. Matchups matter. But no Cooper on the outside, it's not something I think I want to experiment with for too long.
Right. It kind of felt as though the passing game was feeling its way without Cooper in the first half. I mean, maybe that's not the main reason that they ran into some struggles, but I feel it did play a factor. And then, you know, once again, halftime, trying to reset the table and coming out effective in the second half again was encouraging. The red zone was a particular problem in the first half, because, you know, you had a situation where you go 0-for-3 in the red zone the first half, you're fortunate to only be down 10-6. That was where I feel Miami really had a chance to put a dagger in the Bills, and they didn't do it. And they ended up paying for it in the end. But, yeah, you got to hope Cooper's okay. Wrist injuries suddenly are the soup du jour for the Bills' injury list, because DeJuan Smoot goes out with a wrist injury yesterday. You already got Benford and Cooper with wrist injuries. You got Dwayne Carter on IR with a wrist injury that required surgery. So let's just hope that's the end of those.
Yeah, this is another game where, like, guys that are kind of depth pieces at this point end up making big plays for them. I mean, Morris is in the right spot on somehow Allen getting that ball to him. And Matt Collins maybe has his best day because he caught every target that was thrown his way. But, Chris, like, Ray Davis's play, I mean, that's such an impressive run by him after the catch. And it just kind of feels like no matter who is in there at running back, like, and for fans, maybe this is true. Like, in the past, it's, oh, why is this guy in? Why are we in this formation? Why is this running back in? And right now, no matter who's in the ball game at running back, it just feels like all three are doing pretty well. And they're all kind of their own different version.
Yeah, they're doing a great job. And they probably haven't gotten enough credit. They have been touchdown machines for this team. I mean, all three of them have had multiple touchdowns. I think Ty Johnson only has receiving touchdowns. I don't know if he's got a rushing touchdown yet this season. Maybe he does. But they've all impacted the game on the ground and through the air. So it's a great collection of talent there. And they've all helped through the course of the season. And I almost kind of thought about it on the way home from the game. You know, the longest scoring play in James Cook's career is the 49-yard touchdown that he ran against Miami in week two. Down, you know, for his third touchdown of the game against them, and then Ray Davis rips off a 63-yarder. Granted, it was a reception, but I don't know. This trio of backs, I don't think they're getting enough credit. They've been outstanding, like, from the jump when the season started.
Chris, I'll be the first one to use this phrase that I do not subscribe to. I'm going to put that out there. But, you know, the Colts this week, the Chiefs next week. Trap game, I'm sure. On your show, you'll hear it. We'll hear, you know, the idea, like, overlooking. But that's not something I feel like I ever worry about with a Sean McDermott team or a Josh Allen team. It just, they don't seem to trip in these spots, knock on wood. You know, get the job done, Indianapolis, whatever happens at quarterback, we'll wait to see. But I'm not going to be worried about that, even though I'm sure we'll have to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll have to maybe most importantly examine the health of the roster this week first. And then try to assess how things could shake out in the game on Sunday. I will say this. I think when a team wins games and goes on a winning streak, I think it's harder for players when they're winning to keep their nose to the grindstone because you're feeling good. Yeah, you weren't perfect. And maybe the nature of the game being a close one will keep them squarely focused on the next game in front of them. It's hard not to think, though, that Chiefs game looms large, especially if they win tonight and improve to 8-0. So, I don't know. You want to say keep your eyes on the next one only. I think when you're ripping off 3-4 wins in a row, and you know they've got 2 3-game winning streaks already, and now this one's at 4. Yeah, you would hope they learned their lesson from earlier in the season when they won 3 in a row and then got waxed for 2 straight weeks.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's the lesson learned and they don't go down that path again.
Chris Brown on the Western Hotline. Thanks, Chris. We'll chat on Friday.
All right. Have a good day, guys.
Chris Brown, his appearance brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills, and by Lockport Outdoor Store, high impact gear for hardworking men and women. I have not looked to see what the spread is in this game yet. Do you know?
For the Bills and the Colts?
Bills and Colts. I could check it.
I would guess it's going to be Bills minus 6.
6 or 7?
They're on the road, right? Like, you're not going to think it's going to be too drastic. Let's see. All right. Ooh, a little off. Bills minus 4.5.
Okay.
4.5 point
favorite. Bills on that. Hey, before we let you go, be caller 5 to win a pair of tickets to the Shorzy Fall Classic at KeyBank Center Wednesday, November 13th. Courtesy of AEG Presents, visit Ticketmaster.com to get your tickets. Caller 5 to 716-2214-WGR. Pair of tickets to the Shorzy Fall Classic at KeyBank Center.
Fakes the handoff, rolls to his right, looking to pass, now gets hit as he throws, and it's caught in the end zone by Quinton Morris. His first catch of the season goes for a touchdown.
Yeah. What a story, man. What a story. T-Bass hitting a franchise record kick. And that doesn't happen by itself, so I want to make sure I give credit where credit's due. In addition to T-Bass with Sam and Reed and the guys up front that were blocking for him. So just big-time kick for us.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott on this Victory Monday. That slice of audio brought to you by Picasso's Pizza, your game day tailgating headquarters. Let's get around the league in a dash. Brought to you by Dash's Market, serving Western New York for over 100 years. Shop the family of finer foods, Dash's Market. One I'll say is if you're watching the Seahawks-Rams game.
It was chaos.
Puka got kicked out. Yeah. Weak call.
Yep.
Threw a punch.
Kind of.
15 yards. Should not have been kicked out. JSN, if you had him in fantasy, he had 40 points in my formats.
Yep.
Because he caught a million passes, got a ton of targets, 180 in two touchdowns, and could have had like 250 receiving.
Mm-hmm.
They got plays called back. JSN had a big day for the Seahawks.
He and Lockett did, by the way, a week after they did almost nothing against the
Bills. That's right. That's right.
They went off. And Geno Smith threw two of the worst one. He also threw a red zone pick after this. He threw like the worst interception you'll ever see. Pick six, right?
I'm not
103 yards.
Geno Smith did? Okay, you think that's bad?
Horrible.
Make sure you see Jordan Love's pick six from yesterday.
I also saw that
pretty
one.
Bad. He's got two of the worst ones this year.
Yeah, he has a couple Will Levis plays.
He had one in the opener in Brazil. It was a terrible pick six, and he had another one. The Lions go in and win their first game of the year that was outdoors.
Yeah.
I think they only play three that are outdoors.
Yeah.
At Green Bay, at Chicago, and there might be one more.
Dan Campbell said it was his favorite game of the year because he could see the stains on their jerseys. The mud stains, the dirt stains, whatever.
Yeah. The Ravens offense, there's a quick segment here on NFL, whatever it is. Can the Ravens win with this formula? And you know what the formula is, Joe, right now? The Ravens have, according to Aaron Schatz, DVOA, the third best offensive DVOA in the history of measuring DVOA. Mm-hmm. Number one and number two are the 50 touchdown Mahomes touchdowns for the Chiefs and the perfect season Patriots. Baltimore's third.
Mm-hmm.
That's around the league in a dash. All right, 803-0550 to join us. Open segment, open hour. You can chime in. We'll chat about it. Bills win.
Deadline day tomorrow.
Deadline day.
I'm ready for some ideas on that.
Yeah. Let's do it. Justin Jefferson. No, okay, I'm sorry. All right. It's Victory Monday. Football Monday. Monday brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com.
Fakes the handoff. Fakes the throw. Comes back. Wide open in the end zone is Mac Hollins for a 2-yard touchdown reception. The former Dolphin across the back of the end zone as the Bills give the Dolphins a taste of their own medicine with some misdirection.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.